Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Joseph.
And I'm Nick.
And this is Fish Jelly.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Sometimes at night when I'm sad, I like to put on my CPAP and pretend I'm one of those preemie babies and everyone's praying for me.
Yeah, you've been enjoying that little joke.
I saw this comedian on TikTok say that, and I've been laughing all day about it. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've been meaning to do this and keep forgetting, but I wanted to read some of the nice reviews people left on Apple Podcasts about our podcast. This would also be a moment to encourage people to rate us on Apple or Spotify. It helps, apparently.
Okay.
I'll start with a negative one, though.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Well, to have balance.
Sure.
This person gave us 1 star out of 5. I enjoy your podcast, but I have to say one thing about your latest episode, Remember the Night. Nick said Geraldine Page was very old when she won. She was only 60. I'm 62. So that 60 doesn't seem that old. It's all relative.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that review before. I'd encourage anyone to look up I love Ms. Page. I do. I think she's an incredible actress and probably should have won an Oscar before Trip to Bountiful. But look up of what she looked like.
She does look old.
She looks older than she is.
62 is not old, but she looks old in the movie.
And for the record, I believe Jessica Tandy is technically the oldest Oscar winner. Age is but a number. You are only as old as you feel.
But they say they enjoy the podcast, so thank you for listening. I do feel like 1 star for 1 episode out of 140.
For calling me ageist? All they talk about is these old ladies that I love. Jesus. It's a term of endearment.
Other reviews on here. This is one of my favorite podcasts. The honest reviews and humorous commentary on everyday life, according to Nick and Joseph, are interesting, fun, and oh so satisfying. Love you guys. I'm late to the podcast. I'm a big fan of your YouTube channel, so I'm so happy I finally got a chance to start streaming the podcast. Love these guys and their work. Thanks for sharing your talents. Just a really great podcast, a great supplement to their YouTube channel. Always look forward to a new show. My favorite movie and lifestyle podcast. They have incredible chemistry together. Great on YouTube as well. I really could listen to these two talk about anything. Please continue to spoil movies, mispronounce names, and throw shade. I absolutely love you too. There are more. People can read them on Apple Podcasts. But if you're not the best at coming up with reviews, you don't have to write a review. You can just leave a star rating. Mm. Thank you kindly.
Is that what we are? Movie and lifestyle?
I like that.
I just talk shit. Who talks more shit? You talk more shit, I think.
Oh, well, you're more reckless.
Reckless?
Yeah, because you can't stop yourself. Once you get going, you just... To me, that seems reckless. But
reckless.
Moving on. Mm. Yesterday, we went to the LAFCA Awards ceremony.
Yes.
The Los Angeles Film Critics Association Awards ceremony, of which you're a member.
Uh-huh.
It was fun, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, a member 3 years now since I was inducted.
It was at a ballroom at the Millennium Biltmore, which is a location downtown L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And it
was the first time I've attended the awards that I vote in.
They gave us alcohol and food, and some of the winners showed up. Most notably, Emma Stone
was there. Yeah, Jonathan Glazer
was there.
Celine Song, I thought she had a nice acceptance speech.
Her speech was really nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wong Bing,
who I'm on a separate part of the jury that comes up with the award for best experimental and independent film. And that was part of my doing. I didn't realize this is the first time Wong Bing has received an award in the US, which that's flabbergasting to me. But
he was so cute because he required an interpreter because he said his English wasn't sufficient. But I always think it's funny because it was almost out of a sitcom where he would talk for a while. Mm-hmm. And then the interpreter, who was this really nice looking lady, nice as in she seemed nice, she would be like, he says thank you. It wasn't that simple, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he was talking for a while and then she just said like 3-4 words. Like, I know he said more than that.
And then
Andrew Haig,
yes. The Lifetime Achievement Award this year went to Agnieszka Holland, who was there, and Ed Harris, who's worked for her 3 times, paid tribute to her.
Which was interesting because someone who I guess is a LAFCA member, because every award was introduced by a LAFCA member. And so the person introducing Agnieszka Holland, she got up there, and you know I do not like listening to people cough, and she was coughing while she was giving this.
She either had a dry throat or something. She did cough into the microphone.
Oh, I hate that. But she kind of gave a meandering speech, and then I didn't understand why we needed her, because then Ed Harris got up. And I'm sure universally we would all say we would prefer to hear from Ed Harris. And I got the sense he was kind of shading her, because at first he says like, well, no, at first he starts coughing. And he makes a big deal out of the coughing.
He turns around and hawks up a loogie. Actually.
Yeah, and like wipes his hands with it. And I thought, I mean, he was being funny.
He was being funny.
Like, I don't think he really spit in his hand, but I think he was mocking her coughing. And then he goes, well, I tried to connect with her to see what she was going to say so I don't repeat what she says. So I got the sense that he thought it was pointless for her to speak. But it was really fun listening to Ed Harris talk about.
Again, though, like, I think that the organization was trying to give something a little more comprehensive about her entire career, including her latest film, Green Border, which is a very contentious but successful, at least via box office, in Poland. And so I think she was trying to speak more to that. And he was giving very specific
personal
anecdotes about their working relationship.
But I enjoyed hearing him speak. Devine Joy Randolph? Am I saying it incorrectly? Divine?
It's not divine.
Devine, I'm so sorry. I don't want to mispronounce her name, but she showed up and gave her acceptance speech, which I thought was really cute, because at one point she's reading off of a piece of paper and she goes, wait, my assistant wrote this part and this is not true. Which the part that she said was like, I would endure 100 Boston winters to work with this director again. And she said, that's not true. But it seemed like she really enjoyed the experience. And so it was fun. I heard some people complaining about the food.
That's always the case, though.
Which I think, I don't know. One person I heard complaining about the food looked like they sit in their car and cry while they eat Taco Bell. So I don't know. I mean, maybe you're not used to eating banquet food. I am. So to me,
they had vegetables, chicken.
It was what I would expect from banquet food.
Yes.
That's not like, you know, like I'm not expecting fine dining.
I'm not going here. I was more concerned about access to the wine. So
I thought the food was good. And I actually, we started with a caprese salad, and then there was some chicken with some little golden potatoes and green beans.
Although it's awkward because all the clanking of the forks and knives on plates while people are talking.
It can be distracting.
Yeah.
And then for dessert, there was like a tiramisu. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, you know, I liked it. I thought it was lovely. And the space was really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's sitting at circular tables. So of course, some people will be facing away from the stage, which I was. So that was not comfortable. I'm surprised my neck and back don't hurt today. But that was lovely. Mm-hmm. Someone asked us to talk about the SAG Award nominations.
Oh,
I don't really
pay attention to those.
I can just go through a few.
But it's funny, they are always trying to give a leg up to Annette Bening, which I appreciate. But they left out some, you know, Fantasia didn't get nominated. I know I needed.
Well, let's just go through a few of these categories. So male actor in a leading role, Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo, Rustin, Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy, Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright, American Fiction. Who would you say should get it from that group?
From that cat, that the thems. I don't know. I'd think it'd be really fun if Jeffrey Wright were to win for something like American Fiction. But also, I think most of those, except for Giamatti and Jeffrey Wright, I think the rest of them are playing based on real life people.
Oh, so sure.
It's funny how biopics still reign supreme.
Female actor in a leading role, Annette Bening for Naiad, Lily Gladstone, Killers of the Flower Moon, Carey Mulligan, Maestro, Margot Robbie, Barbie, Emma Stone, Poor Things.
And again, three of those five are based on real life people. Barbie, Margot Robbie, I'm tired of this. This does not need to be. She's taking up space.
Well, at the LAFCA Awards, Barbie got like best production design, I think, which I think does make sense. The movie did look fantastic. But yeah, I thought Margot Robbie's Barbie was kind of, she did fine, I guess. If you have to play Barbie. But I mean, I don't think she did anything exceptional in that role.
And I'm just so tired of these, you know, the people that are going out of their way to defend this film as saving the industry.
Who would you give this award to?
Out of those people, probably Emma.
Male actor in a supporting role, Sterling K. Brown, American Fiction, mm-hmm. Willem Dafoe, Poor Things, Robert De Niro, Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr., Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling, Barbie.
Oh my God.
I have seen all of these. I would give it to
Willem.
I'd give it to Willem.
But I mean, Downey Jr. is OTT in Oppenheimer.
I thought he was annoying in Oppenheimer.
And he just won a Golden Globe, so I guess I'm in the minority.
Ryan Gosling's cute in Barbie. I did like Robert De Niro in Killers of the Flower Moon, but...
Not Knuff for...
No, because I feel like he's kind of always playing like not a very nice man. So this felt very much like him doing what he normally does.
Sure.
And Sterling K. Brown in American Fiction, I found... amusing. Female actor in a supporting role, Emily Blunt, Oppenheimer.
No.
Danielle Brooks, The Color Purple. Penelope Cruz, Ferrari. Jodie Foster, Naiad. And, oh my God, Daveen Joy Randolph, The Holdovers.
That's fine.
Who would you give this one to?
I don't know. Maybe... The Holdovers.
And then...
Danielle.
Then they have something... I mean, they do TV too, but we don't do that. They have a category motion picture cast. Okay. Mm-hmm. The nominees are American Fiction, Barbie, The Color Purple, Killers of the Flower Moon, Oppenheimer. I have seen all of these. Mm-hmm. I'd probably give it to The Color Purple.
So it's like basically best ensemble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who would you give it to?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
All right. Moving on. So George, Boy George, the singer.
Yes.
From Culture Club.
Yeah, I remember him.
And as a solo artist, quite popular. He wrote a memoir.
Oh, boy.
And in the memoir.
Oh, get it? Oh, boy, George.
He talks about Janet Jackson.
Ooh, what's he say about her?
He said the two of them met in the 80s on that show Solid Gold. Mm-hmm. And that he says he was a big fan of hers before that. So when he saw they were on the show together, he was very excited to meet her. So he approached her backstage without his face on. So just clean face, boy George. And he says, she wasn't friendly and didn't try to be, but I just walked off and got myself into my best boy George and then was walking back around. And then after that, someone, I guess, said that she wanted to meet him. And he said that when someone approached him saying that, like, if he wanted to record a message, like on video for her or something. Mm-hmm. And he said that he said on camera, next time you meet someone, be nice. So then after he recorded that video, then they said, oh, she wants to talk to you, to basically apologize. Mm-hmm. 'Cause she said, sorry, I didn't recognize you. And he said, he told her, are you saying you would have been nice to me if you knew who I was?
Well, yeah. Is that so crazy?
So, but then he went on to say that, you know, he's like, that he understands and that he still likes her. And he has stories too about other big stars like Madonna. And...
sure. But I mean, you know, sometimes when you catch people off guard, you don't know if they're going through, you never know what people are going through. And a celebrity is approached all the damn time. And maybe you just... it's Kathleen Turner, serial mom. This is my bad side. Like, she did not have the capacity to be pleasant at the moment. It's okay. And you got an apology.
He also said he was a big Tina Turner fan. And so one time he was at an event and Elton John was there and he's friendly with Elton. So he asked, like, if he could meet Tina. Mm-hmm. And when Elton introduced him, she turned her back to him.
Oh.
So he said that she wasn't nice to him either.
Okay. Well,
I mean,
I don't know what to say.
But then he says that he's still the biggest Tina Turner fan and he forgave her and loves her. I mean, I think, you know.
You know what? This sounds like something coming from. He's not looking beyond himself. Like, he's this. We're the center of all our own universes, but it's like, maybe you just don't fucking matter to them.
Well, living in LA, like if you go, like if I'm somewhere and like, it doesn't matter where you go. Like if you're at a social thing and you mention a celebrity's name, some asshole's going to be like, oh, she's a dick. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, well, in what context? Oh, you were a cater waiter at a party and you accidentally bumped into her and she gave you a snide look. And now anytime you hear her name, you tell people she's a bitch. Mm-hmm. It's just like, well, I would give the same look if you bumped into me too. And also, like,
right. But I don't think that means that they're a nasty person. Now, some behavior, you know, it's just, there's no question, but that kind of shit, like, I don't know.
I think most people are, you know, I mean, I think it's unfortunate that sometimes someone, you know, it's like on social media when you see these BuzzFeed things and it's like, oh, you know, servers talk about the celebrities who are the best and worst tippers, and then one server at some place got, you know, a 20% tip from Jennifer Lopez, and now everyone's saying that she's a horrible tipper. Why would I? Because you know that I'm rich, I have to give you more standard tip.
Why do I have to give you more? No.
Like, I mean, I don't think that seems fair either.
And boy George, I'm sure, has had a legion of little homosexuals that thought that for whatever reason they could get his attention, that he rebuffed, that feel the same way about him.
Do I think Janet Jackson has never been rude to someone? No. But I just think it's funny that another celebrity would be like, she didn't. It's like, I'm sure you've experienced too, where it's like you're being bombarded with people and it's like, sorry, I didn't.
You're at fucking capacity right now, man. I'm not here to be pleasant sometimes.
There are even YouTube compilation videos of celebrities on the red carpet being approached by other celebrities and they kind of like blow them off because it's like, I don't know who you are. You just got in my face. Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
I'm not prepared to talk to you.
You're like, occupy my personal space. And yeah, maybe you are also notable, but I don't recognize you. Like,
see, I think he's his pride was wounded because he believes he's on the same playing field and arguably is, but
sure. And I'm not defending Janet Jackson. She probably was being a bitch when she met him. Like, she didn't want to meet this old pasty looking man, but,
well,
you know,
She's not a saint. Nobody is. Like, come on, calm down. What an innocuous story to tell, though.
Well, that's why I brought it up, because, like, to write this memoir and then you're basically calling out people who weren't as nice to you as...
I mean, that took up pages. We know you did drugs.
This is also why there's that saying, never meet your idols, because I just feel like to hold someone in such high regard, it's like they're not going to live up to that.
They're not going to
invest the time to, like, make you feel okay about all the time and energy and money and also, that you've spent on them.
I think people want to feel like they made an impression or are memorable to these celebrities, but you're meeting them in a way that countless other people meet them. The human brain does not have room for that. For most of us. So if you really want to meet somebody, you know, maybe it's going to have to happen in a different way. I don't know. Not just approaching somebody and getting an autograph.
Someone sent me an article that caught my attention when I read the headline. A Houston rapper allegedly held a woman captive in his garage for years. So I'm like, well, who in the hell is this rapper? The rapper's name is
Megan Thee Stallion.
No. Viper. Viper's real name is Lee Carter. He's a 52-year-old man. He is known as he does something called cloud rap, which is a subgenre that features a hazy production style and relaxed beats. I don't know what the hell cloud rap sounds like. But anyway, his most popular song on Spotify is called Yule, YOU LL. Yule cowards don't even smoke crack.
Okay.
Man, if y'all need to look up what this man looks like. This Negro looks like a light-skinned Krusty the Clown. He looks crazy.
What's his name?
His rapper name is Viper. But yeah, his big song is Yule Cowards Don't Even Smoke Crack. But anyway, the story is that this woman claims that he kidnapped her like 4 or 5 years ago while she was panhandling and pregnant. And locked her in his garage. Reading the details, it sounds like two crackheads in love is what it sounds like. Like, this sounds like crack behavior, because it also seems like she was able to leave a lot. And then this lady talks about telling people she was kidnapped. And it's like, well, if you have access to all these people to tell them that you've been kidnapped, and then also she texted... I guess she texted authorities numerous times saying she was trapped. And so I don't quite understand. Mm-hmm. But then it also says when police arrived and they broke into the garage, it did appear that the garage was locked from the inside, and that there was a makeshift toilet that wasn't attached to anything with a mattress. And the woman was extremely malnourished. Apparently she weighed like 70 pounds and was surviving off of like snacks, like bags of chips and Hostess snack cakes or something. So it's all very crazy, but.
There's a song called Kill Yourself, My Man. This mugshot is, this hair is unfortunate, sir.
But... it's a lot.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Even these photos of him on Google Images are like when somebody hits you up online and it's like, you can't take a clear photo of yourself. What's wrong?
Moving on, you brought this to my attention. Pearl star Mia Goth is reportedly being sued by a background actor who is accusing her of intentionally kicking him in the head while filming the third installment of the X trilogy, Maxine. Apparently, this guy, this 30-year-old actor, he was hired to do a scene where he's like a dead body in a pool of blood, and during one take,
she hit him by accident.
Yeah, by accident one time. So he brought it to someone's attention, like, hey, this bitch needs to be careful. And so he's claiming that on another take, she deliberately kicked him in the head.
And then went and taunted him in the bathroom and said, what the fuck are you going to do about it?
So if that's true, I mean, get your money, man, because that's just not appropriate. Like,
it's not.
But accidents happen. But I mean, to get mad because someone called out, like, let's be a little more careful. That's bratty behavior.
It is. But that sounds really petty. Also, he was asked not to. He was supposed to be there for 3 days. And after that first day, he was asked not to come back to set. So.
But who knows? I mean, I guess once this is settled, I guess we'll know the truth. But that's unfortunate if it is true.
Yes, it is. But I don't. I feel like I take every. To me, it everybody's suspicious. I don't, this sounds like a way for someone to get attention as well, is another interpretation of that. Why would she do that?
Well, I mean, if she did, yeah, it's like, why would you do that? That's pretty awful.
That's pretty, whatever.
Moving on. So the theatrical release of Poor Things in the UK, there's some talk because a scene was removed.
A sex scene, probably.
A sex scene involving, so in Poor Things, Emma Stone's character, there's a segment where she works as a prostitute in a brothel. And there's one John who brings his two small children in.
With Damien Bernard.
Mm-hmm. To give them like a lesson on what sex is like. So then we see the two young boys watching their dad having sex with Emma Stone. Obviously, I'm sure they were not in the same room at the same time this was being filmed. But that's what we're supposed to think. So the British, I want to make sure I get it right. The British Board of Film Classification took issue with that sex scene. And so the film's been re-edited for British theaters.
Okay.
I mean, I guess I don't understand, what's the point of having a rating system then, if then you still have to remove stuff?
You can like censor shit.
If they think that it's like extra adult, then call it X or NC, whatever they use in the UK, mark it as such. And then, so now only adults can go see it. Mm-hmm. And what adult is going to a movie that's rated X and then being offended that there's something?
Well,
yes. Like, I think it's silly to remove stuff. Just, this is what we have. Then why do we have a rating system?
Well, right.
If then you're just going to remove it because it's too much. Let me decide.
How about you just sit at home and sit under a rock and ignore?
I'm a 45-year-old man. If I go and pay my little $20 to go see a movie that's, I'm told, is like the most adult content I could find, then I should be prepared to see some shit that might be, you know, a little taboo, a little shocking. If you don't want to see that, stay your ass at home.
Right.
See The Boys in the Boat.
Your little neutered life and shut the fuck up.
Lastly, I wanted to check on all the people who made it their New Year's resolution to go to the gym, because we're not even like, I mean, the second week is done and the gym has thinned out. So
I want
to, y'all can do it. Well, it's just like, you know, that first few days after New Year's, it was packed.
Of course.
It was so packed you could smell people.
That's why I also hate the gym. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I went yesterday and it was thinned out. So
you should be happy.
No, I mean, you know, it's like, I mean, I don't give a shit about the gym except that I go, but I would also not go if I didn't want to. So, but yeah, if y'all resolve to do it, just, you can do it.
You can do it.
See step weather.
But it's hard, though. It is hard to stay committed to it. Yes.
Let's take a break. Moving on to the restaurant section. Mm. I'll start with the negative. California Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, my God. I forgot we went there.
Oh, something in my spirit told me not to go there, because I have a lot of experience with California Pizza Kitchen, and they've all been negative.
It would just very mediocre.
You can't be called California Pizza Kitchen and then not even do pizza well.
Yeah, that's always been the problem.
And don't even talk about their other offerings, because those are just as bad, if not worse. Mm-hmm. And I used to work near a California Pizza Kitchen, so 90% of our business lunches would be at CPK, because it was like the nicest sit down restaurant near us that always had seating for a reason. First of all, that shit is so overpriced.
Uh-huh.
And it's so mid, as the kids say, I think. But so we were in Beverly Hills last week to go see a movie. I forget which movie it was.
It was a press screening of something. Oh, it was Book of Clarence.
So right before we went to go see the Book of Clarence, we needed to eat dinner. Something in my spirit told me not to go, but we walked into the California Pizza Kitchen in Beverly Hills, and it was filthy. Filthy. I should look up the manager's name so I can call him out.
Well, first of all, we walked in, and the man behind the counter looked at us. I was like, oh, yeah, we want to be seated. And he's like, well, I think I can do that. Yeah.
That kid looked like that gay actor who was in Blue Beetle as the assistant to Susan Sarandon. Mm-hmm. He looked at us like he was confused. Like, yes. We had just walked into a restaurant but asked him to change our oil. Like, he looked so confused. And he's like, well, I guess I could seat you. There were so many dirty, unbused tables. And I looked at you and thought, this was a mistake. Then we sit down and it took forever to get our food to the point where I was 30 seconds away from telling them, cancel my order because I'm going to be late to this movie. The food's overpriced. We get our food. Okay, my burger was tasty. I asked for it medium well. They gave me a straight up hockey puck. That wasn't that meat so overdone?
It was very overdone, yeah.
Then
you were talking about Harvey Guillen, by the way.
Yes, that's who I was talking about as the person who greeted us at the door. Then my burger came with, I guess they don't make regular French fries. They do like fried potatoes, which were cold, and they only gave me like five of them. And they were covered in like truffle cheese, something. Oh, so bad. Then your pizza, It just tasted like frozen pizza. And California Pizza Kitchen sells frozen pizza at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. And it literally tasted like that.
Well, you know, sometimes you need it's kind of like years ago when we lived in South Bay and went to a Red Lobster. And it's like, that's why we don't go here anymore.
At least the cheddar biscuits are good.
It was that in Compton? Where was that?
Inglewood. This is the Red Lobster. Where's the Red Lobster? People know. It's where we went.
No, where'd we go?
We went to one in New York once, didn't we?
Yeah, but we drove all around looking for that place you like.
That's Long John Silver's.
That was Compton.
Yeah, that one is in Compton. But CPK, I don't know. Y'all can send me a gift card, but I'm sure even the free food is going to be bad. I'm mad.
I don't think we need to go there again.
But someplace I did like is across from the Grove / Farmers Market. There is a restaurant that's attached to Short Stories Hotel. It used to be called the Farmer's Daughter, I believe.
Before that, it was Tart.
And then before that, it was Tart. Mm-hmm. It's been there for years.
Yeah.
And I think they struggle. Yeah. But I was looking at the hotel. It's very cute. Like when you walk into the hotel, you walk into the lobby and front desk, which has space for like two agents. And then they have their pool area. It's almost like a Four Seasons. What do they call it? Four Seasons patio or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It kind of looks like that. And there's a lot of glass. It's really pretty. And then to the left of the lobby, when you walk in, there's a restaurant and it's very small, But the seating is beautiful.
Intimate.
Very intimate. And they have a really nice happy hour.
Yeah.
So I would recommend.
Well, the gentleman working was also very nice and helpful.
He was.
Because he's like, don't feel like you have to rush. Because we were at the end of happy hour.
Because I was ordering multiple drinks. Yeah,
he's like, oh, don't. He's like, I got you. Don't worry about it.
Well, too late now. You didn't tell me that. So now I look ghetto as hell talking about, let me get six glasses of wine at this happy hour price.
You got a drink and a glass of wine. And then he's like, oh, is the third person coming? And you're like, no, that's for me.
He looked at me like, oh, we have a drinking problem. Listen, brother, just give me my drink. But I ordered something I've never ordered before, which was a daiquiri. Because I always assumed daiquiris were like those frozen,
slushy,
like a pina colada. And I always think about Monique, the comedian, in one of her special, in the Queens of Comedy. She talks about her then husband being like illiterate And that it's embarrassing to go out to eat with him because he'll try to order off the menu knowing he can't read. And then she says, mimicking him, like, can I get a strawberry daiquiri?
Oh,
what the fuck is a daiquiri?
Well, he can read something. He can read a little something.
He read strawberry.
Yeah.
But so I never ordered a daiquiri, I guess, because I was expecting, because I had ordered a glass of wine and the daiquiri, because I thought the daiquiri would be like a sugary, slushy drink. But it wasn't. It was like they served like a martini. Mm-hmm. And that shit was strong and it was good. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed they have like a happy hour burger with fries. Yes. That was only like $10 and it was very good.
Yeah, the fries were good.
I would absolutely go back there. I think it's the perfect place to go if you have like a 6 o'clock movie
at the Grove.
Mm-hmm. Then you can get there like 4:30, get your little drinks, get your little burger.
Get your little swerve on.
But shout out to Short Stories Hotel.
Take a nap in the
car. You can also send us a gift card. Our PO box is in the description of this podcast anyway. Moving on to films released.
Didn't we go somewhere else to eat? Oh, no, I made you borscht this week.
Oh, you want to talk about that?
Oh, I like my borscht.
Nick has been talking about making borscht for a while, and he's acting like it's... I don't know why you felt like you couldn't just make it.
Well, because you sometimes throw a little tantrum when I make something that you don't want.
Well, I don't like beets, and I knew borscht was beets. I had had borscht without you. I don't know where I would have had it, but so I already knew what it was. Mm. I will say it was better like the day after for some reason. So when we finished it, I was kind of like, oh, too bad, because you used the recipe called for beef ribs, but you decided to buy.
I've read several recipes. You don't have to, but
whatever cut of beef you bought.
I used top sirloin.
Top sirloin. It was very good. Mm-hmm. Very tender. And of course, sour cream with anything makes it better.
Yes.
You served it with nice buttered bread. So I did enjoy it, but it was better the day after.
And I've been making carbonara, which I'd never really made homemade before.
Yeah, that's good.
Which, you know, is with eggs.
There's eggs in that?
That's what the sauce is. The sauce is eggs.
Like runny egg?
Yeah.
Ooh, I didn't know that. Because you know I don't like runny eggs.
Yeah, but it's with cheese and it's you pour it on when everything's really hot. So it's
fine. Well, I didn't know that that's what it was, but it was very good. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on to films released we didn't cover. Destroy All Neighbors.
Oh, yeah. I think this is a Shudder release and directed by Josh Forbes and stars Jonah Ray of the new Mystery Science Theater. He's the human in the Mystery Science Theater team.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Driving Madeline.
New Christian Carrion film starring Lino Renault and Danny Boone. We just saw Danny Boone in the new Francois Ozon. But he plays a taxi driver driving this lady around named Madeline.
Inshallah, a boy.
This was pretty good. I saw this out of Cannes last year. It's a Jordanian film directed by Amjad al-Rashid. It's about a woman and her husband dies and she's got a small daughter. And according to custom there, her husband's, I think it's brother, is able to swoop in and take all his assets and shit and control her life. So the only thing that she has available to her is to lie and say she's pregnant to remain control over her assets. Oh. But of course she's not pregnant. And this relative wants her shit. So it's an uncomfortable, tense film.
Lift.
I'm surprised you didn't want to watch this, but new F. Gary Gray film, although it's a Netflix release, starring Kevin Hart and Gugu Mbatha-Raw.
Kevin Hart is not a draw to me
at all. But F. Gary Gray, I mean, at one time F. Gary Gray, I think, was a phenomenal director.
Didn't he do the Eddie Murphy Christmas movie?
No, that's Reginald Hudlin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But at one time, he was also great.
I don't want to put that on F. Gary Gray then.
F. Gary Gray's done some turkeys, but I mean, you know, Straight Out of Compton, but Set It Off, Friday, you know.
Well, I guess I could still watch it. Mm-hmm. Next, Role Play.
I think this is an Amazon Prime release. Thomas Vincent directs, starring Kali Cuoco and David Oyelowo. David Oyelowo has been busy.
Yeah. Self-Reliance.
Hulu release. I like Jake Johnson. He directed a movie starring himself and Andy Samberg.
The Settlers.
I saw this out of Cannes as well. I think it was Chile's official selection at the Oscars this year, directed by Felix Galvez. And I believe Alfredo Castro is in it. And it's kind of a brutal film. It's definitely dark, but I would recommend it.
And T.I.M.
Tim, I was surprised you passed on this too, but Spencer Brown directs, starring Georgina Campbell of Barbarian fame. The acronym T.I.M. stands for Technologically Integrated Manservant.
Oh, I don't know anything about this.
Well, I send you a list of everything and to ask you to tell me what we were doing. Oh, so well, you were exposed to all of these.
Next, projects of interest.
I think it's already been announced that Selena Gomez is going to play Linda Ronstadt. But David O. Russell is now going to direct.
Something called To the Wedding.
Andrea Palaro just received some coin, I believe, out of the Berlinale co-production market. They announced a raft of projects that are receiving some funding, but he's got a new project. And we talked to him.
To Andrea Palaro?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Italian man who did Monica.
Monica, yes.
Oh, yes.
But he was telling us about his projects, and I'm assuming this is the one that he's retooling from a Bertolucci script.
Okay, nice. Alma?
Sally Potter has a new project, which should be interesting. She did a movie, is that 2019 Assad in Berlin with Javier Bardem and Elle Fanning that I hated. Ugh. But it is Sally Potter, and you know, the one she did previous to that, The Party, I loved, with Patricia Clarkson and now deceased Bruno Ganz. But yeah, Alma.
And then I added one to the list. I'm not really interested in this, but I think it's funny. Jennifer Lopez is going to star in a movie with Derek Huff called Can't Get Enough, where she's the bride.
Ooh.
So once again, and I believe it's being directed by Dave Myers, who I know has directed Janet Jackson music videos, and he's directed music videos for J-Lo. I'm assuming since it's starring her and Derek Huff, there will be a lot of dancing in it. I am willing to bet money this will not be a good movie.
Derek Huff and his fucking sister, I don't ever have to see them again in my life and be fine.
I am curious to see what his acting will be like.
Isn't he in Rock of Ages?
Oh, is he?
I never saw that with Tom Cruise.
I have watched a couple of interviews with him, and he seems kind of plastic. So, you know, it might be interesting to see how he acts.
His sister too, yeah.
Unfortunately, there is an entry in the obituary section. Oh. An actor named Adon Canto died from appendix cancer. He was only 42. He was on a couple of popular series like The Following, Blood and Oil, that Netflix series Narcos. He's in the 2014 X-Men movie. He played Sunspot.
And he's in Halle Berry's movie Bruised.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he leaves behind a wife and two children. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, he's young.
We'll take another break. The secret film this week was your choice, and you chose the 1984 French thriller film La Garce, which is translated as The Bitch.
The Bitch, starring Isabelle Huppert. And I don't know, I've wanted to see this for years and years and years. It's long been unavailable here until recently. But a film starring Huppert titled The Bitch, you know I was excited to see this.
The premise. Lucien Sabatier is a police inspector. One night, while he is on his round, he retrieves a young girl ejected from a car. This meeting with Aline, a 17-year-old orphan, will be decisive for the rest of her life. That's a terrible premise. What did you think of this movie?
Well, I liked it clearly a lot more than you did. But
I didn't like this movie.
Oh, I think that there's a lot under the surface to unpack and talk about in this film.
There's definitely a lot going on.
Maybe we should start with Christine Pascal, who directed it. She's probably best known for the handful of films she's directed. She killed herself in 1996. She threw herself out of a window at a hospital in a psychiatric ward. I think it's also note before we get into this, the male lead in Richard Berry in 2021, his daughter came forward and accused him of sexually assaulting her when she was a teenager, which
is relevant to this story,
which is very relevant to this story and casts kind of a different kind of shadow upon it.
Okay. So Isabelle Huppert plays this lady, and we meet her when she's 17. And she's picked up by a cop, Sabatier is his last name, played by
Sabatier,
the man you just said, Sabatier. Okay, so she gets picked up and she's acting all weird and he's kind of trying to, like, it's clear she doesn't want to show him her ID because she's underage. So she's maybe using what she has, her feminine wiles, to like distract him. So she's kind of flirting with him. He stops the car. She locks him out. He breaks into his car, yanks her out, and has sex with her, seemingly against her will. She seems like she's into it, lets him take her home. And then we see, like, the next day that she and her parents have accused him of raping her, which is a problem because she's underage, he sexually assaulted her, and he's a cop.
Uh-huh.
So he gets 6 years in prison. So when he gets out, he can't be a cop anymore. So he gets hired by some of his cop buddies to be a private eye. Mm-hmm. Like, they've started their own outfit. And the first job we see him do is he's supposed to follow this lady who's being accused of stealing, like, some other designer's fashions. And this
which is very much reminded me of Bring It On, the head cheerleader going to steal the black girl's cheers.
So when he goes to spy on this lady, he realizes that this lady he is following is Isabel's character. So when he met her as a 17-year-old, her name was Aline. But now the woman he's following, her name is Edith. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, wait a minute, what's going on? So of course the audience is like, well, why did she change her identity? What happened? Initially I thought, oh, maybe the public scrutiny of her being like, maybe the case was a big deal and everyone knows her, so she wanted to change her name. But it turns out that she has like an ex-boyfriend who's a mobster.
Max, played by Vittorio Mezzogiorno, who of course is the father of Giovanna.
Oh.
Who's one of the most notable contemporary Italian actresses.
Oh. Mm-hmm. So it's her ex who has hired this private eye, Sabatier, to follow Isabel. Because the ex-boyfriend, the mobster, his thought process is like, if we put the heat on her, she'll run back to my arms. So what's the heat? What does she do? This bitch, I think the title of the movie is perfect, The Bitch, because I kept thinking, this bitch is crazy. But this bitch, along with Max, her ex-boyfriend slash mobster, killed her parents.
Who are her adoptive parents.
They're her adoptive parents.
Who are also anti-Semitic. And
they're super conservative and anti-Semitic.
And she's Jewish.
And Isabel's character is Jewish. So one night she's out having sex with Max in a car and her parents just roll up. Like the mom's like, I knew your ass would be here, you whore.
And this is after the rape.
And this is after she's already accused a cop of raping her and sending his ass to prison for 6 years. Now she's at it again with a man too old for her.
But this is the man that threw her out of his Jaguar the night she met the cop.
Yes, which we can get to. But Isabel kills her mom, like shoots her. And then Max shoots the dad. Mm-hmm. So now they both are guilty of murder and they know each other's secret, but they get away with it.
Yes. And then
we need to talk about.
And she gets a new identity. This Edith
woman, Isabel, yeah,
is the daughter of this shop owner who basically has been paid to give her his shop.
The identity Isabel Huppert's character assumed belongs to this lady who seems to have like,
she has some kind of condition.
She's mute and catatonic.
Sits at home all day.
And so Isabel bought that girl's identity from the shop owner. But yeah, Max, the ex-boyfriend, thought like, well, if I put the heat on her and she thinks someone's going to expose her as a murderer, she'll run back into my arms. But the craziest shit happens because Sabatier falls in love with her again and is willing to do anything to protect her. And they kind of go back and forth. But in the end, things get hot with Max.
Isabel realizes that Max, Vittorio, is the one that set Lucien on her tail, she burns the store down.
So now things are hot because Max comes to get her with a gun. And then they're going to kill Sabatier, but then he threatens to kill Isabel. So they're able to escape. And they realize we have to leave town. Or France, because if we don't, they're always going to follow us. So everything ends with Sabatier, because Isabel eventually goes to him for help. And he says, okay, well, I'm going to go get you like a fake passport. So he tries. So he goes to a buddy of his, and the buddy's like, fool, you know Max runs all this shit, so you're not going to get a fake passport unless you go through him, and he wants to kill you. And Sabatier says, I don't care. Take me to Max. Sabatier goes to Max's hotel.
Well, no, his buddy kind of double-crossed him. He didn't know he was going to Max.
He asked him. I thought he asked him, like, the buddy tells him you're not going to be able to get it without going through Max. So I assume that he's like, okay, if that's what you want. But either way.
Oh, I thought he seemed surprised when Vittorio shows up.
We can talk more about it. But anyway, Sabatier ends up going to Max's hotel room and tells him like, yeah, I know you want to kill me. And keep in mind, Max is pointing a gun at him like, I'm going to kill you. He's like, well, but I need your help. Isabel needs a passport. Okay, well, why? She needs to escape or she'll never be free. okay, well, she and I can escape together.
He's already found a new identity for her.
And Sabatier, because Max is like, well, great, because I already have a new passport for her. And Sabatier says, well, no, she's not going with you. She's going with me. He's real bold and crazy. Mm-hmm. And Max, the mobster, is like, oh, yeah, she's going with you? Fool, she's already here. And then who pops out of the bathroom? Isabel.
In a blonde wig.
Looking like
a Hitchcock wig.
Looking like, she looked like a Holly Hunter to me.
Oh, boy. From The Firm.
Because she has this terrible blonde bob wig on. But then things get even more crazy because now the mobster wants to kill Sabatier. And Isabel goes, no, don't. I love him. And then she's like, I'm not going to go with you, mobster guy. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I don't want your passport. And she just walks away.
Yeah.
And then the film ends with narration from Sabatier saying, like, I don't know where she went or if she actually left with Max, but I went back to Paris and just waited for her. Mm-hmm. The end.
Yeah, you didn't like this, but I really like the kind of ambivalence that's going on here.
It's a little too dry and a little too involved. And I just don't, because this is, I guess, like, how would you classify this? Like a thriller?
I'd say this is a more of like a psychological thriller.
I just don't, it's just so dry and there's no passion.
A neo-noir even, but.
But the neo-noir, so then I'm thinking it doesn't feel like a good neo-noir because there's no tension. Like
the tension really should be in us examining kind of this ambivalence, and it's a film that is a complete gray area. I think we should start with the opening sexual assault, because it's one of those rare scenes where it clearly is staged as an assault on this 17-year-old girl, but then she begins to act in a way that makes us think that she's changed her mind.
Well, it's very clear what he's doing to her is inappropriate, right?
Of course.
I think the ambiguity is that she is presenting herself as wanting it. So what I took away from it was he's acting inappropriately, and I would say he did assault her.
Yes.
But she made him feel like it was fine. So then the gag is the next day when he's called into his boss's office, like, you raped an underage girl, like you're in trouble.
But I think it goes even further into that. And I don't know, maybe I felt some kind of way because of my own early sexual experiences. But when he first finds her as Edith and follows her, she goes by herself longingly at night at the place where he assaulted her.
Right.
So clearly this was a formative sexual experience for her, even if she'd already been kind of a loose.
Yeah, girl. She seems to like, I mean, yeah, it seems formative because now she cruises the spot trying to have sex with random men. I don't know. But
or just remembering.
Here's what so describing the movie, it sounds like it'd be really dark and twisted, but it's not. It's so, I like the way the film is shot, but I don't think it's shot in a way that supports any aspect of it being thrilling or suspenseful.
Well, I think I like that it's resisting all of those things because it forces you to kind of really think about what's going on with these three.
I think that's a fair assessment or approach to the film. I just don't know that the film was deliberately doing that for us. I don't know that the filmmaker was thinking that.
I think she's trying to be provocative in a way that we don't often see dealing with depictions of sexual assault.
I think maybe it's a psychological component that's missing because the basics of it. So this adult, you know, like 40-year-old man, cop, rapes an underage girl, goes to prison for it, and then once he gets out, he is forced to interact with her again under these weird circumstances. Like, I'm being paid to investigate this now woman
for
who's going by a different name for something very innocuous.
For like, something that's a ruse anyway.
Cause... Yeah, so that's super interesting. Mm-hmm. But then I think what I hated the most, and I don't hate this movie, I don't think it's terrible. I think if it sounds interesting, you should watch it. I think the fact that two people who typically agree not agreeing would be a reason to watch it because you know I don't think it's a bad movie, but what was missing for me completely is I don't understand why Sabatier felt so drawn to this girl, woman. And I don't understand why Max, the mobster, was so connected to her. And the little sex scenes we see with her, that shit looks so... Like, I just don't see what was so alluring and addictive about Isabel's character.
Well, I think at least
for... She looked like a gummy little lady. Like, I just don't understand.
At least for Sabati, I think when you go through some... Because what he... Although he is the one assaulting, he's also gone through something traumatic because of her. He has served 6 years in prison.
The other issue is both of the men are attractive. And so, I mean, they are. They're both like mature, attractive men, one of whom is rich and the other was a person with power, right? A police officer. Mm-hmm. And Sabatier is married with children. Mm-hmm. And we meet his wife. And his wife's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Well, his ex-wife now, because she left his ass when he got convicted of raping an underage girl and she remarried. But then to add another layer of complexity that felt so unnecessary is we see that Sabatier is still, like, I guess he's having an affair with his ex-wife.
He has sex with her and still does not want to see the two children that he had with her because he thinks it's better to have, like, just a clean slate.
It just would have been so much more interesting to examine that. Even that, like, this woman who is still interacting with this man who she built a life with, who ended up going to prison for raping an underage girl. That alone is fascinating.
Yes, but I think what we...
And we get nothing about that. Except that she's willing to tend to his wounds and have sex with him.
Yes, but what I think that you're avoiding talking about is these two men are fascinated with a woman they feel they should have control of and don't. They want a type of ownership over her that she's not willing to give them. And I think that, because that is what people pursue, something that they feel they deserve but can't obtain.
Yeah. That subtext is obvious, though. Like, yeah, of course, these men think they can control her. I mean, more so Max than... Max feels like he feels like he should have control of her. And so he's...
When she goes back to Max and interrupts his late night card game to say, like, Sabatier is back, I need your help. And that's where we learn about their dirty little secret. He tells her that she's grown older and she's not as good at controlling men anymore.
Well, he's playing a game with her. He is, yes. Because at that point, we don't know that this motherfucker is the one who paid to have Sabatier.
Right, we don't. But...
So I think that's very interesting. And what you said is true. And then it's true for Sabatier because he's like... fixate, like he's addicted to her for some reason.
Well, because he spent 6 years in prison because of her, and he wants answers.
Yeah, but that psychosis is very interesting, and I don't think like yeah, it's obvious that this sort of thing that happened, because even the premise that says will be divisive for the rest of her life, I feel like it's more like decisive for his life. Like mm-hmm. He made this bad decision
that ruined his career.
That's ruined his career and his family, mm-hmm. And now he's like.
The essay in the DVD release by Alexandra Heller Nicholas, which I'll read a passage of at the end, but she talks about what happens to Sabatier is kind of a feminist fantasy, that not only does a man go to prison for 6 years for rape, but he's also a cop.
But even that, like, you know, saying those words, it's like, yeah, that sounds really interesting and what a great angle for a story. But I feel like the way it plays out in this movie is like there really were no consequences for Sabatier, except as the audience, I'm looking at him like, you are really dumb. You are like, I feel like that one guy who made that video, hide your kids, hide your wives, because they rape it. Like Antoine Dodson saying, you are really dumb. That's how I felt watching him. Like, why are you fooling with this lady who ruined your life? What about her is so alluring that you are going to throw it away again?
I think
even when he's in danger.
But I think part of it is this character's Aline and Edith. It's her resistance. And I think Uper, her career reflects this, her resistance to being a good victim.
I think we're spreading the overwhelming feeling I have about this movie, besides it being dry, is that there's too much going on.
Oh, but see, that's genre. That's pure genre.
I think that we needed to really focus more on like Edith / Aline and Sabatier.
So maybe you
to
don't
understand
like
their thought processes. You,
the approach is pulp to something that's really psychological. Is that what you're... you would like more psychological finesse, but this is clear.
Well, I think to call it a psychological thriller. So now I'm saying, because you said it's a psychological thriller, and I'm saying, well, where's the psychology in it? Like, it's just presenting.
The onus is on us to bring that.
Yeah, but it's like, you know what it feels like? In Hollywood, there used to be a restaurant that was like, you build your own pasta, but it was like Asian Indian infused like ingredients. And I hated eating there because I'm not a chef. I don't know what ingredients go together. You have Indian inspired components, Asian inspired components, and then these different kinds of noodles. And we ate there maybe 5 or 6 times.
I liked
it. And every time I ate there, I was not happy with my dish because you give me all these options, present all these things to me, and then I'm supposed to put it together. Like, I don't know. I don't know what makes sense. That's kind of how I feel about this movie.
Oh, like, but see, that's exactly the type of film that I gravitate towards because I like, well, maybe that's the English major in me, is you come up with a hypothesis and you make the defense for it based on the evidence of what's presented in the film.
I don't mind choose your own adventure type shit.
It's but not I, choose your own adventure. Like, this is a tangible, this object is complete, but what am I bringing to it? What are my interpretations of this behavior? And I like this kind of ambivalence, is it's this director and these screenwriters aren't laying it out for us.
Sure. I didn't think there was much. There are a lot of really interesting ingredients, but yeah, I just putting it together, like as it washed over me, I'm like, this shit was really dry. And I didn't think that I had all the ingredients to make something that felt like I was satisfied with the decisions the three main characters made.
Sure. But I liked all of them. Richard Berry, I'm more familiar with as an older gentleman in film, and he kind of reminded me of Justin Long a little bit. But I think he's very striking on screen, as is Vittorio Mezzogiorno.
I thought that man looked like Bradley Cooper with a fake nose on, so I guess that would be Bradley Cooper in Maestro. He looked like Bradley Cooper in Maestro to me. I haven't seen Maestro, but I Googled pictures.
Yes, this Vittorio's nose is a little more prominent, I think, than Bradley as Leonard Bernstein. But Vittorio also reminded me of an actor named Checky Caro, especially around this period in 80s French cinema. But yeah, I really liked him. He has this sinister reptilian look.
Something else the film does that I didn't appreciate is at a point, because we don't know who's really responsible for hiring the private investigator, at a point we're thrown off, well, the character Sabatier is like thrown off the track by being told that Isabel herself hired him. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, okay, wait, so why would she? I don't know. It just felt like, oh, you're sending me for like, it felt kind of lazy to me to just throw all this shit in there just to confuse me until I get.
Well, that's classic noir, the use of red herrings. And
yeah, but it didn't make sense. Like, because we're told initially that he's being hired because Isabel's character has this like clothing line and boutique shop where she makes clothes, and another designer is accusing her of stealing his fashions. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, that seems stupid. Like, shouldn't that be easy to prove? Like, where are these garments she's making that copies this person's garments? And don't we have proof that this person made these garments last season?
But they're not thinking that far ahead. They just want, they know enough.
You're right. But what I'm,
there's so much baggage going on between these people that he is going to follow her.
You're right. But what I'm saying is that the bones of why this is even happening are so ridiculous that it's just kind of like, okay, well, this is so stupid that someone's even hiring a PI to figure out that she stole someone's like bolero coat pattern. And then to find out, oh, and then maybe she's the one who did it. It's like, okay, well, this makes no sense. So then I just felt like I'm just waiting and waiting. This movie's also only 90 minutes. And I swear it felt like I was watching it for 2.5 hours.
See, I don't feel that way. I thought it felt the appropriate amount of time, but I do watch a lot more slow French cinema than you do.
I really don't have any notes. I mean, my one note since we like to reference Amanda Seale's stand-up comedy, when we see Sabaté having an affair with his wife, I wrote down, what are we talking about now? Like, what are you doing now? You're following around this lady who got you hemmed up in prison, lost your family, lost your job. Now you're like back with your wife, but infatuated with the girl. I don't know.
I think it's funny in the beginning when he's first confronted by his supervisor, like right after the rape is reported, and the supervisor tells him that's some Zola shit.
What did that mean?
Emile Zola, writer. Okay. But going back to, you know, France's history of men doing shit to young girls. I also thought it was funny when Isabel first pops into his car, into Sabatier's car. She's very, she tries to turn on the heater and then she turns on the radio and it's Jane Birkin, I believe, that they listen to quite uncomfortably for a little bit.
I was triggered in that scene because, you know, I hate people get in my car and start pushing buttons and telling me to turn up this and turn that down. And, another note I wrote down is when towards the end of the film, after like Sabatier knows the truth, he's been threatened by Max, Isabel fakes like her own death maybe because she had set her shop on fire. Mm-hmm. So no one knows where she is. This bitch, again, the title is so appropriate. She shows up to his house asking for help. I would have thrown her down the stairs.
And he's with
is another, that double jeopardy? Can I get in trouble?
He's with another woman.
Like, it's just all so good. The more I talk about the film, I do think it's interesting. I don't think it's a bad movie. I didn't enjoy it.
But I'm not going to say it's a perfect film, but I did very much enjoy it. And I think I wish I'd seen this again. It wasn't available here for a long time with subtitles, but as a conversation with something like Elle.
Sure.
I think there are fascinating parallels.
At a point, Isabel, when she goes and asks for help from Sabatier and they're driving in his car, he stops. And I kept thinking, why do people in this movie keep stopping their cars to get out? Because bad things happen. But she gets out and like bends over the hood.
It's wanting, in the same spot.
In the same, and wanting him to have sex with her, and he rejects her. But then they go back and they end up having sex. And then the scene where he penetrates her is shot slow-mo. Mm-hmm. Which reminded me of when the Na'vi connected those winged horses in Avatar.
Oh, they made the bonds.
Yeah, that didn't work for me. We only have a few minutes left and you wanted to read something.
Yeah, just a passage from, I thought of kind of a very well-written essay about this film. Lagarce can be seen through the lens of Huppert's broader filmography as an earlier companion piece of sorts to Elle. These films both teeter dangerously on the edges of an unspoken yet palpable effort by both Pascal and Verhoeven to blur the lines of rape and desire, consensual and non-consensual sex. That more risk-aversive filmmakers avoid such gray areas is no surprise, fearing the implicit suggestion that women enjoy rape or are asking for it would push them emphatically across a line that both common sense and good taste dictate should not be crossed. The temptation, of course, is to dismiss any film that ventures into such a volatile ethical terrain as problematic, a catch-all that in contemporary critical usage is increasingly feeling more and more like a weasel word. Instead of shutting down conversation the way that films accused of being problematic so often are in these politically sensitive times, movies like Lagarce are perhaps best viewed as not just opening discourse up, but a blasting the entire lid right off. We don't need to approve of the way rape, sexual violence, and desire blur in The Bitch to accept it as a provocation, a launchpad to explore a whole range of difficult questions the film ultimately asks, and I'd like to add, really does not answer.
I think that's interesting because in L, it's much more ambiguous because, and I don't really remember the movie except that I think I remember that Isabel like has rape fantasies and so she's trying to make those happen. But in
it opens with very brutal rape and then she develops a relationship with the rapist.
Oh, okay. Well, but aside from that, because I'm talking about this movie, in this movie, I don't think it's ambiguous. I think what this man having sex with her was inappropriate. I don't think that's a question. She was underage. He's also in a position of authority. He's a cop.
Oh yeah,
who happens to be married.
Yes, I agree.
So I don't think that there's any ambiguity in that. He just seems stupid and inappropriate
from an objective standpoint. Yes, there's no question that he is inappropriate and that was assault. But what muddies the water is between these two people are needing to navigate who enjoyed what and when, and is that meaningful to either of them? And I think that's why he's still interested in discovering that.
I don't think that part is that interesting. What would be interesting to me is why he feels drawn to her. What about that, which you already said, probably, I mean, how interesting would it have been to focus on the trauma he experienced losing his family, his career, going to prison, and having that be the bond that he has with this woman who may or may not even think about him.
This toxic bond.
Yeah. Yes. I think the movie should have focused on the toxic bond. And instead, we just get a whole bunch of stuff happening that feels dry and crazy.
That you referenced Laura, the Preminger film that we watched recently afterwards.
Yes, where that detective becomes infatuated with this dead woman who turns out not to be dead. Mm-hmm. I didn't love that movie either, but we have to end this. What would you give the bitch?
Again, this will be a much higher score than you are, but I'm giving it 3.5.
I'm going to give it 2.5 out of 5 mm-hmm. because I feel, yeah, I don't want to deter people from giving it a chance. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Ta-ta. Ha